Hey, oh, and here we go. It's WTC, We Talk Comics. We're on the air for our 59th show. This one subtitled, The Calm Before the Storm. Again, we'll explain to you in a little bit. First off, Brett, how you doing?
I'm alive.
You're alive, Brett? That's uplifting. Chris, how you doing?
Pretty good. My pants don't fit properly, though. Kind of bummed out about it.
That in turn is not uplifting.
No, well, exactly, because how can you find pants to fit when you have such an incredibly small anyways? Keith, how you doing?
I'm fine, Mo. My pants are fine. I'm fine.
Your pants, everything's perfectly proportioned. You seem more relaxed and happy this week, Keith. I can see the difference.
I'm having a good week.
I bet you are. Sitting around reading some comics, are you?
That's right.
That's right. Well, hey, you know what? I bet you did have one responsibility this week, and that was to get us the weekly news with Cub Reporter K, because that's you. And as you know, this is sponsored by this site called Comicosity. Now, we always talk about how they have great stuff over there. The reviews and the previews and the articles. You know what I love more than anything else? It is the previews in that site. They let me know what I need to read and what's maybe not quite so important, better than any other site out there in their previews. Especially love the Hot 5 that they do every single week, where they tell us there's 5 books that they highlight, saying those are the ones you really want to take a look at in case you haven't thought about it when you walk into your comic book shop. So Comicosity, absolutely visit our sponsor. They're a great, great site. And Keith, I already said this, but it's the weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
It is, and I will start with the most important news. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is not playing Batman in the Justice League movie. Poor Joseph Gordon-Levitt is this year's Ryan Reynolds. Every time there is a roll-up, that he is the rumored person. I'm surprised that Ryan Reynolds has not been rumored for the Justice League movie already too.
Wouldn't he play Green Lantern?
Not after how that's gone. he may be too busy working on Deadpool.
Oh boy!
It'll be Chris Evans. Chris Evans will be in.
He needs another franchise. He definitely be worried about that.
Can I ask
guy
you a dumb
work.
Question?
Sure.
What's his name? Gordon Jordan.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah. So I don't know who he is.
Best actor of our time.
Yes, you love him. He was Cobra Commander. You know the kid from Third Rock from the Sun?
Yeah.
You love him, man.
The star of Brick.
I don't love him, Chris. I like the show Third Rock from the Sun, and he was on it.
Well, okay.
I love him. Awesome.
I never saw the G.I. Joe movie. It came out post 1974. So I have not seen that film yet.
I will say that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's movies made prior to 1974 are really not worth watching.
Yeah, that's what I say. I hear he's hitting his prime now. Okay, so Joseph, he was going to play Batman? What a bad choice that would have been. Anyways, go on.
Mo has no context for why this was rumored to begin with, and we're not going to bother getting into it.
We need to fill in some time this week, Keith.
In real casting news... In real casting news, Bryan Singer has confirmed that Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen will return in X-Men Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
Along with James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender, who have played the young versions of these characters. I love this. I couldn't love this more. I have been dying to... ever since I saw X-Men First Class, I've wanted to see Fassbender and McKellen in the same film.
Okay, so they're going to be able to fix the continuity? You're going to be able to connect the dots here?
No, I can't imagine this continuity being worse.
All right.
They haven't ever fixed it in the X-Men, so why would they do it in the movies?
Theoretically,
I mean, comic books have never made any sense, man. I'm still trying to figure out where Rachel Phoenix fits into the Marvel timeline.
Don't Keith, where does she fit in? You're the news reporter.
This will be an episode.
Or, you know, they could fix everything just by adding Cable to the X-Men movie. Because that's what they do in the comic books. Whenever they get a time problem, they just say Cable fixed it.
Oh, that's nice.
All right, well, let's pause for a casting call. Who plays Cable in the X-Men film?
The guy...
Chris Evans.
Perfect.
Awesome.
I'm going to go with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Played Punisher.
I would have gone with him, but I can't remember his name.
I'm going with the guy who played comedian in The Watchmen. What's his name? Jeffrey Dean Morgan?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan. That's good casting.
Yeah.
Chris, what was yours?
The guy who played the Punisher in Punisher Warzone.
Livingston. Was it Ray? Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Ray Livingston.
Ray, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Winston?
Winston. It's one of
no, Winston. I think he's 500, right?
Winston?
Yeah. Winston, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Whoever it was, one of those was right.
Yes.
All right. I got Burgess Meredith.
Excellent. I would also approve of him. Actually, I would approve of him over the guy who played the Punisher.
Oh no, the guy who played the Punisher actually, we'd be good in that role. He looks it. He would look it. But yeah.
The correct answer: Ernest Borgnine. All right. We've got
the correct answer for everything is Ernest Borgnine, who just recently passed away. But Keith wouldn't know that because deaths are the one thing in his news section that he just ignores.
Ernest Borgnine is dead.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mobius.
Yes, he just recently passed.
Well, now I'm all sad. Can we take a moment to remember the great roles of Ernest Borgnine?
Yes, he lent his voice to SpongeBob SquarePants as the classic character Mermaid Man.
What I'm going to love is the email I get from Ernest Borgnine saying, I'm not dead. No, I'm pretty sure he passed on. Are we going to have to actually look this up? Is anyone else going to be responsible?
No, because he's dead.
Oh, okay, good. Thank God.
If any of our listeners have mistaken this for a live podcast, please tweet us right now. Tell us whether Ernest Borgnine is currently alive. It is a comic podcast, so I will refer to him as currently alive.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, it's a comic book podcast. He could have been dead and come back. All right, what else you got there, Keith?
We've got the Throne of Atlantis crossover is coming up. Justice League and Aquaman. Aquaman 14 through 16 and Justice League 15 through 17. This is the first little, it's a short little crossover that will fill in the gap between now and when we get to Trinity War.
They say fill in the gap. To me, it smells like try and boost Aquaman's sales.
Aquaman doesn't really need a boost in the sales.
No?
Still doing quite well.
I assumed it's Aquaman. When those words, Aquaman's doing well in sales, ever been uttered before?
Only recently.
I'm going to say for the last 14 months.
Now, which titles are involved in this crossover?
Just those two. Strange that they issued a checklist for a crossover that only has two books.
Yes.
But yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's... those are the Geoff Johns books.
Are we reading it?
I read Aquaman, actually.
Oh, there you go.
I kind of read Justice League spottily.
But are we reading it?
I don't know.
Keith, Brett won't.
I have no intention of reading it. But
what if we make you read it for the podcast?
Then I'd probably read an issue.
How many issues is this crossover? Four?
Six.
Oh yeah, that's a lot of work. Forget it. Forget I brought it up.
Geoff Johns, well, though, that's not really heavy lifting.
No, that's true. You know, in all fairness, Mo, by the time it's over in like 4 months or whatever, we will have all forgotten that it happened.
Yeah, no question. No question. It's just a setup for something else that we won't read, right, Brett?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Brett loves DC.
Hey, I am reading the Rise of the Third Army Green Lantern storyline.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And you're reading that Rot World stuff, right? Has that happened yet?
I'm not reading it, but I'm putting it away.
Oh, you're putting it aside to read it. I was going to ask you how it's going.
But
you just screwed that up, didn't you?
That's right. I, on the other side of the coin, I do love the Rise of the Third Army storyline.
There you go. There you
so,
go.
You see, there is DC that I like.
There you go. Keith, got any more news?
Sure. Matt Fraction has announced that Hawkeye 7 and 8, which is a two-parter focusing on Hurricane Sandy. Fraction will donate his entire salary and royalties from Hawkeye Number 7 to the American Red Cross.
Yeah, that's cool.
That is amazing. He will give them $28.97. So great.
Oh, Brett. That is, it's funny, but it's an incredibly douchey thing to say.
I guess he ran out of backlog of generic comic book scripts. He's actually writing a comic book that has relevant issues.
Well, I hope he does a good job with it, because it's you know, the people who have suffered through that deserve it, and it is a classy move by him.
No, it's a great move.
I'm not particularly fond of his writing ability, but I think that's an extremely classy move.
It's a great move, and I hope that it makes lots of money for them. And I know that comic stores are getting behind it and stuff like that. The idea of comic book royalties seems kind of funny.
Please remember that you can donate directly to the Red Cross and really skip the middleman in this process.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. And then you could actually skip even reading 7 and 8 of that.
Oh, we do love our Matt Fraction. Valiant.
No, we don't.
Valiant is bringing back the 90s. They have announced a trading card deal with Rittenhouse Archives.
I sure hope they have holograms in there.
Oh, you know what? When you said you had Valiant had the worst idea ever, and I thought Ninjak was the worst possible idea. Well, you're right. This tops it. Bringing back non-sport playing cards. Ouch.
For all 5 of their characters. Wicked.
I forgot to tell you, Chris, that Ninjak is back already.
Oh, I've seen him. He just doesn't have a title.
Is he purple?
I believe he is
purple. Yes. He has purple. He has purple on his uniform. And gold.
And gold.
Man, this is a great podcast.
This is all gold. We've got 4 standalone issues of Fatal coming up. Brubaker and Phillips will be highlighting highlighting characters in flashback one shots. These are starting in December.
I'm there.
Wow, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel with the news, ain't you?
I don't see the news with Cup Reporter Brett happening here anywhere.
Well, it's happened before.
All right, let's now go to Brett.
That went really well, actually.
Let's go to Brett. He's going to fill 20 minutes.
Brett, why don't you tell some comic book related jokes?
Because I leave that up to you, sir.
All right, just to get things moving a little bit, does it give a page count on these one shots? Are they indeed single issues, or can I get some extra pages of Fatal in these?
They are single issues, and look like they'll be standard size. They are numbered within the series. So they're numbered 11 through 14 standalone issues. So I shouldn't say one shots, they're standalone issues.
Damn it, I was kind of hoping to add some extra pages out of them.
All right, and that's the news, and now we're going to Brett for 20 minutes.
Excellent. All right. So comic books. Started a long
Starts
time
off
ago.
Well.
They got pictures, they got words. And I like stuff. Pictures.
Some of them
I
don't like have words.
Oh, that's true. Some of them don't necessarily have pictures. Oh,
I think all of them have pictures, don't they?
No, look at the John Byrne whiteout issue.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
All right. Enough of that. So this is, of course, WTC. We're in our 59th show. We talk comics. And we said this is the calm before the storm. And the reason why is because we don't have anything prepared for this show, because we're so busy preparing for what's coming up here. We've mapped out our next few shows, and we think we've given you all some great stuff to listen to so far this year. We hope we've been as entertaining as we can be. But I think we're going to really, if we pull off some of the big plans we have and pull them off well, we're going to finish this year out with an incredible bang of some really cool stuff that we won't get anywhere else, and it's going to be be a lot of fun for us to do and for you to listen to, and it's just be great. That said, because of that, we're kind of taking it a little bit back this week. We're stepping back and just, you know, nothing too heavy here. We do have a bunch of books to review in our famous WeView section. And we always say we're not just a review show, and we're not going to be coming forward here. We're going to be doing some other stuff, but we are a little bit for this, you know, particular show going to be more of a review show just after the news here. But I'm just going to throw out to anybody. Does anybody have anything on their mind they want to bring up or talk about before we go to the news or the WeViews?
I'm reading The Invisibles right now.
Oh yeah.
And it's always interesting rereading this. You know, last week Chris asked that, you know, I mentioned that I've been reading it, and he said, can you tell me any plot point that happens in that book? And it's interesting how I don't remember any kind of big storyline to it, but you know, as I read, the small stories come back to me, and that's actually what my favorite parts of the book are, like, you know, the one-off stories. And
what caused you to decide to go back and reread it?
One of the plot points of The Invisibles is that the eschaton, the big change, the end of all things, is happening on December 21st, 2012, which is right around the corner, if you encounter. And
my wife's birthday, in fact, yes. So, yeah, there you go.
Well, like every calendar, it just continues to roll on, but there are some that believe, I've never actually met anyone who authentically believes it, that anything of importance is going to happen on that day, but... that was a plot point in The Invisibles, which was published, you know, 15 years ago. And much as on December 22nd, I have a planned viewing of the movie 2012, the day after it takes place.
Wow, I'm sorry.
Well, don't be sorry. Yeah, I mean,
look, if it's
Keith, it would actually be sitting there for you.
On December 20th, you should be sitting there going, I actually wouldn't mind if the world ends tomorrow, because it'll save me from having to watch that movie on December 22nd. It might be worth it.
That's kind of right. It's kind of right. Yeah. So what is you?
Of course, I've never seen it, but I've heard.
I was about to say how on earth would most review be of any value to me?
I can't believe I got an advanced screening before The Hobbit opens to go see that, and now I've been wrangled into go seeing it.
Oh, nice.
I wasn't planning to see it.
How long is The Hobbit? Have you heard? Like, are they making three?
I believe it starts. I believe we're going to be getting in on a Thursday and coming out the following Wednesday. Yeah, I think they've turned it into three parts somehow. I don't know how the hell they're doing that. There's a lot of characters in that movie that aren't in The Hobbit. Let me tell you, there's a lot of characters from Lord of the Rings in this that aren't in The Hobbit. I wasn't planning to watch the movie, actually, and then I found out Billy Connolly's in it, and it's a free preview the night before it opens, and I'm like, yeah, what the hell?
Yeah, it is. It is three parts. No one can figure out why. I am. I was curious if actually they had split it into three parts so that they could get, you know, shorter screening time, possibly aiming this at younger viewers.
I doubt that's it. I believe they did just so they can put Tom Bombadil in it. I think that's.
Tom Bombadil.
He was my favorite character, man. He wasn't in the freaking Lord of the Rings. Of course, he didn't really add anything to the story.
In that nothing happens for 50 pages.
Nothing happens for 50 pages. But he's entertaining. It's kind of like this podcast. Nothing will happen for 50 minutes, but we're entertaining.
Well, I hope so.
I hope so, too.
We'll all get edited out by Peter Jackson.
So how is the Invisibles dating for you? When I started to read it last week, I found actually a lot of the references and even the art kind of dated to the 90s. Are you finding that a tall distracting?
Just one question. Did you also start reading for the same reason?
Keith had actually mentioned it on Twitter, and I remembered loving the series back when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back because Keith was... I believe Keith hinted that he might be reading it, and I wanted in on the action.
This is some vicious peer pressure to do with The Invisibles. I've been putting it off, and PhotoCub has started his reread because he's doing a blog on it right before.
And he almost got me to read it.
That's right.
but it's something else I'm going to be reading.
All right, I can't lie. Week. I'm 10 issues into it, you know?
Seriously? That's awesome.
The peer pressure got to me, okay? I couldn't do it.
Apparently, 10 issues is the point at which you start talking about that you're reading it, because I had started reading it and kind of put it aside for a couple of days, and then Matt tweeted me and said, "So I'm on volume 1, issue 10. Where are you?" And I'm like, I opened up the book, like, "Holy crap, I'm on volume 1, issue 10. Apparently, this is the issue to be on this week.
Actually, you want to know something kind of funny? The first time I read it, I thought the whole Mayan 2012 thing was a comic book made-up thing. I had no idea it existed in the outside universe.
Yeah, it's made up here, too.
You know what I mean. I thought that was invented for the Invisibles.
I hadn't heard of it back then either, Chris. I didn't hear about it till a few years ago when it started getting close.
Yes, but I read the series.
Yeah, but still. I read the series back in the day, too. Back when it was coming out. So,
what are you reading, Mo?
I'm finishing up reading the Trusik Bakura Star Wars novel. I got about 50 pages to go on that. So
I'm reading the World of Krypton, or Last Days of Krypton by Kevin Anderson, which I'm going to be reviewing for Comicosity.
Oh, nice. So what else? Anybody else got anything else they want to talk about?
Let's talk about Stuntmaster.
Let's do.
No, I was asking the guys, I found a bizarre quote in a back issue of Ghost Rider I was reading, referring to a character named Stuntmaster, and before the podcast, we looked him up, and he has the most fantastic fashion sense I've ever seen. And it turns out he's actually a relevant character in the Marvel Universe. He was in Fear itself. If
Doesn't make him relevant.
Okay, he's made an appearance in the last 20 years, which is amazing.
That's just so they don't lose the
copyright. Once you see the character.
That's a myth, Mo. That doesn't actually happen.
No? Okay.
No. Not how copyright works, though.
All right.
But his fashion sense is so spectacular. I think we should. I think we have a mascot.
Ooh.
I think a little picture of Stuntmaster can go for this episode.
That should be our first voting category for the Weed Talkies. We should actually try to come up with a mascot for the Weed Talk Comics podcast.
Like we don't have anything
to do. I'm throwing it out there.
We're crazy. Chris. I'm looking up this fool right now.
Good luck with that.
We are a little busy.
Kind of fixed since he already picked it.
Yeah.
The fix is in.
Oh, well, no, you guys now have to make suggestions.
It's like this, Forbish Man.
No, Chris, I think what happens is you come to us.
Ninja.
With a bunch of different. Now, here's the problem I have. I go on Marvel.com to look at this character. And it says image not available. And then over on the power grid, when it lists his abilities, it's a 1 intelligence, 1 strength, 1 speed, 1 durability, 1 energy production, and 1 fighting skills.
Well, he has no superpowers.
Yeah, neither does
he's
a
master
lot of people
of stunts,
that have more than that.
He's a master. I don't know. I've never looked up anyone on Marvel.com, so why? You have to give me.
But if Marvel doesn't even think that much of him. Marvel doesn't even think enough of him. Marvel must have a picture of him. They own him. They put him in Fear itself, and they don't even.
He was
still looking up a picture of him.
That's what Google Images is
for. Oh my
god,
I can't believe I had to explain how to use the internet.
Can we take stuff off the internet?
It's a series of tubes.
Also a myth, right?
Oh, really? Oh, crap. No, now my entire day is shot. Screw you.
All right, I'm looking at this guy now over on the George Smith Earth 616, and they have a little picture of this dude, and he looks like the Guardian, kind of.
Which Guardian?
But worse.
With fringes and lightning bolts.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yep. Best damn podcast ever, right here. looking up bad characters. Woo!
Oh, yeah, he does look like DC's Guardian, doesn't he? Yeah.
Guardian
we're talking about, yeah. 1969, he's a classic. All right.
Well, who created this character?
If you're listening at home, please look this up. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't make any sense to you at all.
Yeah. If you have to also look up the Guardian, do that.
When you hear the tone, please hit enter on Google.
It's an interactive podcast.
Bing!
Oh, man.
What was your favorite of the Power Records book and record?
What?
Remember that Power Records? They had like a comic book and it came with a 45 record.
Batman.
Which Batman?
Oh, I forget the one. I know that I probably still have it sitting around, but
this doesn't sound familiar to me at all. Remember, Spider-Man, I'm the youngest on the podcast. The Lizard.
What was that?
Spider-Man versus the Lizard. I had.
Oh yeah, Draco the Dragon Man.
Draco the Dragon Man. Yes.
You betcha, I had that one.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to search the internet, see if I can find some legitimate source to get these. I remember it as a kid loving that.
I need to listen to that now. A while ago that had, you know, it wouldn't be, obviously not official. It would be illegal once someone actually notices it's there, that had a PDF and an MP3 for tons of those Power Records.
Well, you know what? I will download them and send Marvel $5 in a letter explaining.
Just don't explain where they got it.
I've just downloaded a picture of the Stuntmaster you're going to love for the podcast picture. So don't worry. I got it covered.
Nice.
Let's just say I found a gooder.
Nice. I actually was going to go with Spider-Man versus Draco the Dragon Man as well, because that's classic.
Yeah.
I still look at the night sky and try to identify Draco.
I have no idea.
I remembered it better, because I actually remember the name Draco the Dragon Man, but I only remember him fighting the Lizard on that record.
No, it must be. There must be a different one then, though, because he fights the Dragon Man.
I was pretty little when I listened to those, so. I could be thinking of a cartoon show I saw when I was a kid, too.
Yeah, you could be. I really still have no idea what you guys are talking about. But anyways,
you don't remember those.
Let's move on. We got anything else to talk about, or are we going to hit those Wii Views?
I had a Power Record, but you know, I think I got it later in life. Never really had them as a kid.
That's too bad. I had a bunch of the Star Wars ones and...
Weren't they mostly 7? They were 78s, weren't they? Where you needed the plug to play them?
No, weren't those 45s?
No, I think they were 45s.
45s.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I did have Star Wars like records and stuff like that, and where I had the Empire Strikes Back.
Book and record. All right. Well, now. I think we burned away about 20 minutes there quite entertainingly.
Nice job, Keith.
Power
we
records.
Kept them riveted.
Power records and the Stuntmaster. Between them, gold.
We're just going to pretend that this is all an outtakes episode.
That's right.
Cutting room floor.
All right, then. Are we going to the Wii Views?
Is it time to save you from back home?
Here I come to save the day.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's time to save you from bad podcasts.
Well, then we'll go on to the reviews, because that's always gold. All right, we're going to talk first about RIPD, City of the Damned, number 1 of 4, from Dark Horse. This is written by Jeremy Barlow, drawn by Peter M. Linkoff and Tony Parker. Essentially, RIPD is a department that is essentially supposed to ferry people who have died, who don't want to go, leave the Earth along their way, and this is a story, a kind of an origin story, where one city, the Blackpool, has been infected by something that the department can't quite get can't quite get their hands on or understand. So some great evil. So Brett, what did you think of this book?
Not much, actually. There's almost nothing for me here. I didn't really find the writing all that interesting, the characters all that interesting, the art all that interesting. It was just a comic book. So I won't be back.
You won't be back. How about you, Chris?
I actually heard they were making a movie of this before I read this comic book, so I read it with those eyes. And I think it could be an interesting movie, but really, this particular issue does not offer up anything terribly fresh. I'm not coming back either.
Keith, what do you think?
Well, I quite like the art, actually. But the story couldn't hold me. The style seemed to change about halfway through, and I kind of lost interest in it. I like the Western feel, the supernatural Western, and then there's a bit of a change in the art style, there's a change in the storytelling style, and kind of dropped me out of it about halfway along. I did really enjoy the art, though. I thought that was kind of the strong part of the book.
Yeah, I thought the art was fantastic by Lenkhoff and Parker. I was a big, big fan of the art. I actually really enjoyed the story, too. I thought this is a really nice miniseries. I liked the last few pages. It really had me intrigued to come back for the next issue. I'm definitely on for issue 2. In fact, I can't see any way I don't finish off this miniseries. I absolutely recommend it. I enjoy the characters. I thought it was paced well as an opening issue. It set me up so that there's just enough mystery to make me come back, just enough action, just enough characterization. I felt it was a strong book. So I'm actually surprised nobody else liked it that much. I think the art is really, really strong. All right, any rebuttals?
Nope, book doesn't interest me enough to fight about it.
No, that's kind of what I figured. All right, we're moving on then to Witch Doctor Malpractice. This is from Image. What is this? What's the name of this imprint that this is under? Does anybody recall?
No, it's Kirkman's imprint.
It's Kirkman's
imprint. Skybound.
Pardon me?
Skybound.
We'll just keep saying it together.
There you go. So this is Kirkman's new imprint, Skybound. It's by Brandon Seifert, who did the writing as well as the lettering and the arts by Lucas Kettner. And this is a story of Dr. Vincent Morrow, who is a doctor who, not so much that he banishes evil from the world, as if you're sick with evil, for instance, you have a demon or something like that, or you're a werewolf or something like that, he's a doctor who will cure you of it. And it's kind of a different take on it than you might think, though. What did you think, Keith?
Actually, the opposite experience with this book, where I had kind of trouble getting into it the first few pages, and then kind of settled into it and quite enjoyed it as it went on. Very much kind of Bernie Wrightson, EC Comics art style. I think about a half dozen pages in, the characters start to settle in, and it really tells more of a straightforward narrative, giving you a bit of idea of who these characters are, the folks around Morrow. A cliche name, though. Like, I feel like I've heard that name like a dozen times. Like, there's T.O. Morrow in D.C., and just it feels kind of a cliche. But, I'm interested to see the next issue of this. It's kind of a fun horror book. Bit of comedy, bit of horror.
Chris, what do you think?
I actually love this book. I've read the previous two series, or series and a one-shot. This particular book, I thought, was lacking the humor that was definitely present in the two previous books. It's more of a serious story. He's dealing with some consequences to this witch doctor lifestyle. I dig this art and this style. I'm really hoping this develops into a regular series, especially considering the rest of the Kirkman's universe. I think they need a Doctor Strange character, and adding this kind of kookiness into Kirkman's universe kookiness, I think it could be something very special.
Is Skybound, is that an actual universe that he's creating, or just an imprint with different books?
It's just an imprint. However, all Kirkman universe stories take place under the Skybound imprint.
Okay. So, Brett, what do you think of it?
Well, it's definitely a throwback book. I like the fact that it's got some good humor, and I like the fact that it's got some, you know, interesting kind of horror take. I thought it was a really good book. I wasn't sure what to expect out of it with the first six issue or six pages, much like Keith. But after that, yeah, like he said, it did settle in, and I'm totally down with it. I think I'll probably wind up getting all six issues.
You know, I totally agree with you that what Keith says, that it has that Bertie Wrightson EC Comics art, and it does, and Dennis Cowan and someone like that was who I was thinking of. But unfortunately, it's bloody inconsistent from panel to panel. There's times when the guy's head will be incredibly small on his shoulders, and other times where his head will be incredibly huge and jutting out. And the character, this Dr. Morrow character, is another doctor who has a god complex. I just thought this was a boring book. It never went anywhere. It did much. It's just too boring for me to recommend. I mean, just a little bit inconsistent, just not quite good enough. All right, we're moving on to the big book of the week. We might as well get it done. So, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, number one. I can't believe we're reviewing this. This is from IDW, written by Katie Cook and drawn by Andy Price. And Brett?
Well, I think the thing to get out of get off the bat, get done off the bat is the fact that just because we're reviewing it doesn't mean we're bronies, okay?
Keith is. But the rest of us are not bronies.
I have nowhere to put My Little Pony stuff, the amount of Jawa stuff I own. In Jawas and Booster Gold, there's no room for any other addictions here.
Although that being said, there is a My Little Pony in this house, because my wife got a My Little Pony in San Diego one year, one of the limited San Diego ones. But
that's it. Brett is now our official brony correspondent.
Yeah, we're sending you to the convention, Brett.
I actually know a guy who watches all the shows. So I mean, you know, I could probably do a better correspondent.
Tell me off air his name.
But anyways, this comic book is
actually, off air, I'll guess his name.
This comic book is I found it a lot of fun. It's a cute comic. It's got some nice humor in it. It's got some good light fun art. I'd have no problem. There was actually a point, because it's a cliffhanger storyline, and there was actually a point where I thought to myself, "Huh, I should get the next issue and see how this storyline wraps up." And I was just like, "Really? Wait a minute. This is a My Little Pony comic. I shouldn't be saying things like that." But, you know, there it is. And so I'm not saying I'm carrying on, but the urge was there.
You're carrying on, you're our brony.
How are you gonna,
Chris?
How are you gonna maintain that that cred?
Yeah.
Freaking loved it. I hate you guys. I can't believe you made me read it, and I love this comic book. It has a sense of art that's different than the show, yet still harkens the proper imagery to, like, tie it into the series. And this comic book, I have to say, has
Chris
the best layout.
Chris just admitted to watching the show, guys.
I was wondering how far we'd make it there.
I've seen images from the show. I haven't watched the
whole thing. Okay, whatever. Busted, dude.
But it has the best images, the best layout I have seen in a comic book in a long time. I mean, the panel layout in this is spectacular. Truly enjoyed the book. That said, it's My Little Pony, so I won't be back, which is usually my cutoff point for a recommend or a fail. But I would recommend this one. If you have somebody in your life that enjoys My Little Pony, definitely get this book. If not, join me and skip it.
Keith.
It's a very cute book. I'm not the audience for it, but I'm going to make a note because this time next year I may buy it for one of my nieces for Christmas. It's quite cute.
It is well done. It is well, the art is fine and the characterizations are fine, and I just can't decide who the hell the target audience is. Is it the little kids? Is it the adults? Is it just about serving the characters and not playing to a target audience? I mean, some stuff seems like it would be over their head. Some stuff seems just too childish for adults. Okay. It's a very long book, actually.
It's usually
a lot of pages.
It's a good mark of a good cartoon, though, if there's stuff that's...
Well, perhaps. We can ask Chris if it's a good cartoon, but... You know, I wasn't quite sure. It's not that it's a bad book. I mean, but I think it's too long. I think, you know, it's 30 pages or something like that. I just think that this is too long for the storyline and kind of the characters and the style and the jokes, and it all starts to become, it runs too long and it runs the same. It starts to run the same. It starts to stop feeling fresh for me about 18 pages in. So, you know, it's not bad. Probably the reason we had this on our review list is because it was in the hot five at Comicosity. I believe it was actually Photo Cub who wrote it this week and put it on there, saying nostalgia is in. So I think that's the reason I wanted to take a look at it. All right, we're gonna move on again. What do you guys want to do? Nowhere Man? Let's do Nowhere Man, because this was a new book from Image. Essentially, and this is a difficult book to explain. It's written by Eric Stevenson, art by Nate Bellegarde and Jordan Bellar. And Phonographics, of course, did the lettering and coloring, I believe, if I'm correct. How would I explain it? It's about a group of scientists, and in this universe, the scientists are more influential and famous than rock musicians, I guess is the way to put it. It's probably the best way to describe this book. Keith, what do you think of the book?
Ups and downs. I really like the finale. I really like Cliffhanger. I had trouble kind of getting to know the characters, though, and how these characters fit together. So, I mean, maybe that'll come with a couple issues. There's some intriguing concepts here. And like I said, that cliffhanger does kind of make me, it does interest me where it's going to be going for the next issue or two. Is this an ongoing, do we know?
I believe it is an ongoing. I see no listing that it's a miniseries.
Okay. So anything high concept like this, you know, there's enough tease here to get me interested in a second issue, but the second will be the upper bound for whether I keep going after that. Because either you have enough to say or you don't, once you've got your concept unpacked.
Chris, your thoughts on Nowhere Man?
Nowhere Man. Actually, I heard the premise and thought, man, I really need to rewatch Buckaroo Banzai. And that sort of colored my entire reading of this comic book, because that is not what this comic book's about.
God, no.
No, but Scientists as Rock Stars definitely does hearken to Buckaroo Banzai.
Buckaroo.
You know what? This
isn't it. Buckaroo
Banzai.
Buckaroo Banzai.
But on a whole, I thought this premise was better suited to a television show or something. I didn't dig it. I found it dry. I found the scientific jargon not all that interesting. The world I found kind of bleak. I won't be back. I didn't get what this why anyone would need this comic book in their life. I didn't enjoy it.
Brett, your thoughts?
Well, this to me, this read like Eric Stevenson wanting to be Jonathan Hickman. It's like a book that Hickman could have pulled off, and I don't think Eric Stevenson had the first clue on how to pull off. The entire book to me was just a random collection of just different thoughts going potentially nowhere, and it was way too frickin' long. I don't, like, you want to talk about My Little Pony being too long? To me, this one had so much superfluous stuff in it that I could have completely just read, like, 15 pages every 2 pages and pretty much been just fine with the storyline. My biggest concern about this thing is that I'm going to read it for, like, 8 issues, and there's going to be absolutely no payoff. So I'm not even going there. Done in one, big time.
Yeah.
You got it with the Hickman thing. That's definitely what this is.
You know what? Remember when Keith was complaining last week about Indestructible Hulk number one being wordy?
Yeah.
Remember when we all complained about how wordy Action Comics number one by George Perez was? All of those quick reads compared to this. I mean, it just... A character standing there talking for 7 panels and another character standing there talking for another 74 panels and nothing happening. Just talking. Like, after an entire... And then midway through this incredibly boring book, like, they have these characters. They don't really explain who they are. They give us their most basic sense of character. They introduce these 4 guys who you think then are going to carry the show. And then they cut to these guys older, but they don't in any way explain to it that it's them older. And it takes me forever to figure out that these are the same guys because they don't look anything alike. And then we cut to a bunch of other characters that we don't have explained to us what their relationship is with any of the guys that we saw before, who are apparently the lead characters in this, that we never see again. And that just goes on forever, and we get the concept of where they are and what's going on and that these are people that are sick so quickly, and then it just continues to repeat that and repeat that and repeat that and repeat that. It's like when Keith does a review. We get the point, and he just repeats his point again. And then... No, I'm picking on you. But anyways, this is the worst book of the week by far. This was utter crap.
Oh, if I had to read this book or My Little Pony on a monthly basis, My Little Pony, like, big time.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question. My Little Pony isn't great. It's not bad either, though. This is just not good. Like, after I finished reading this, 26 pages or whatever, 24, I don't know how long it was. It felt long. It felt so long. It felt 4,000 pages long. And when I finished reading this, I set it down, and I literally think to myself, okay, because they did have that twist at the end, though I kind of thought it was something like that anyways. And you set it down, and I went, here's the problem. I just read this page. This entire story is just set up. And I get the feeling the next issue will be set up for 2 or 3 more issues to get all their ideas out there before they actually do anything. This sucked.
It's 24 pages, but they do literally spend 5 of them in a conference room with 3 talking heads.
Yeah.
That's brutal. A lot of word balloons.
Really. Painful.
And not this, a lot happening.
This was painful.
Well, let me tell you something, Keith. You've been doing great on your reviews here today. You're to the point. You're on par. It's like you're not exhausted anymore. Didn't you have a life change?
I did.
Was it positive?
I did. I quit my job.
And I'm so damn happy for you.
Are you now a rock star scientist?
That's right. I quit my job as a regular scientist to take a new position as rock star scientist.
Or are you the stunt master?
I have to be better than the stunt master.
I got to tell you, no, I was really happy to hear that. I found out by reading your tremendous 900 Things blog that you're ongoing on our site and that you've been doing every single week. That's where I found out. I was really happy about it. I knew it was a long time coming, so congratulations. All right, we're going to move on here to Mass number one. This is from Dynamite. Done is written by Chris Robertson and Alex Ross, not just doing the covers. Alex Ross is responsible for the art inside. Oh, whose turn is it? Brett, I think it's your turn, man. Go ahead.
All right. Well, it's Chris Roberson, not Robertson, but...
Oh, did I say Robertson?
Yep. That's fine.
Oh, you're right. It is. Yep, there's no T there. No mistake.
But, man, I really enjoyed this book. this is, to me, this was good fun. It's got all these, all the great characters, the Green Hornet, the Spider, the Shadow. I mean, all sorts of good fun stuff, decent storyline. The art by Alex Ross is awesome, as per usual. So, I like it, and I don't want it to last for a ton of issues or anything. If it's four issues, then that would be perfect. But it's fun, and I enjoyed it.
Chris, what do you think of Masks?
It all depends on your tolerance for eye candy. This is an eye candy book. And I don't tend to love those. The art is spectacular. If you really wanted a panel where Zorro takes on the Shadow or to have them in one image, this is the book that you collect. I didn't find the story all that compelling. I didn't find the layouts for the story compel reading. I just enjoyed the art. And if you're willing to buy a book for that, this is the book for you. If not, I leave it on the shelf.
Keith, what do you think?
I didn't give a crap what happened in this book. It's an Alex Ross interior art book. It's gorgeous. Get it. It's amazing. You can just stare at Alex Ross's art for hours. It's he's been on covers for so long, you forget that his storytelling is so strong, that he's able to use those just really striking images with very few panels per page, and it's so expressive that it moves the story along. This is top form. I thought this was Book of the Week.
This is a strong book. I agree. I also liked it quite a bit. I don't think this is Alex Ross's best work. I don't think it's anywhere close to his best work. I think it lacks some of the depth that and storytelling and humanity that we've seen from him at times. And I don't think his page layout was his best. And that's okay, because average Alex Ross is better than pretty much any other human being on the planet anyways. Like, it's still tremendous, even though it's not his best work. I mean, it's tough to compare to some of his... It's tough to compare to Kingdom Come, because that work was so incredible. You know? It's tough for even him to match that, right? It's tough to... Or you know, to Marvel's, because that was so brilliant, right? It's tough for anybody to compare to that. So if this isn't at that level, that's fine. It's still tremendous. I thought the characterizations of Green Hornet, Kato, Ms. Fury, the Spider, and the Shadow, and the characterizations for all these guys were great. It's not a lot of depth, but it didn't need to be, because the characterizations are right. And the storyline is just kind of right, and it sets up a lot of fun action. I enjoyed this a lot, too. We're going to move on, then. I guess we got one last book. We've been saving it. It's FF. This is a Matt Fraction and Mike Allred. So, Brett, or no, Keith, I guess it's your turn on this one. What do you think?
Marvel Now, this is how you relaunch a book. I know exactly who everyone is in the story. I know exactly how these characters fit together. There's a mention of what's happening in Fantastic Four without me having had to read it. I don't know how long I'll continue, because I'm interested to see probably a first arc and see how these characters relate. I thought the 4 minutes thing was a bit silly, but as the issue went on, it was kind of neat how they kept tying it back in, the way that this team is really only supposed to be together for 4 minutes, which I don't think is a spoiler. And I don't know, Allred's art I'm hot and cold on. I think it really works here.
Chris, it sounds like your turn.
Yeah, no, I actually was pleasantly surprised by this book. After the monstrosity that the relaunch of the Fantastic Four was, I was expecting more of the same. And Allred's art really lends itself to this kind of thing. Actually, when they announced this team, I thought I was going to lose the regular FF characters. I'm not. All the kids make appearance in this book. And I was just glad that they had a home. I will say that Fraction's writing of the Thing is something to behold. It is really quite terrible. And I'm hoping that thing doesn't make a regular appearance on this book. Sorry?
If by behold, you mean puke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Really, I hate Fraction dialogue for the thing, and thankfully he's not a starring character in this book, or I hope he's not. We've got a lot of characters, and I enjoyed the book. I was pleasantly surprised. I am concerned that I might have to start reading the Fantastic Four to go along to follow this story, because Hickman's Fantastic Four and FF definitely crossed over a whole bunch. I'm hoping that this is a different case. Drop the Fantastic Four, pick up the FF.
Brett?
I'm really torn on this book. I loved All Red's art. I absolutely loved it. Given this in relation to the Fantastic Four, I want to I love the storyline. I think the storyline sounds really great. It's the kind of thing where I'm like, I'd really like to read that storyline. But then you read Fantastic Four and you're like, well, I can't read that storyline because Matt Fraction just won't let me. And so as I read this book, there's these moments where I'm like, oh, I want to like it. I just can't get there. And I think for me, the biggest problem was that this just felt like Matt Fraction writing for Mike Allred's art. I just don't think that he's writing a book because this is the way he would write a book. I think it's just because he's writing for Allred's art. And for me, there's just a massive disconnect on my enjoyment level of anything that Matt Fraction writes. And for that reason, I just can't be interested.
This was a very... I think you really hit that well, Brett, because I think this is actually a pretty good book. I liked it. I remember putting it down at the end and going, not only am I back for this one, I hated Fantastic Four so much a couple weeks ago. It was so ungodly awful. And I liked this enough that it made me actually want to read issue number 2 of Fantastic Four. So that tells you I really did enjoy this. But I do wonder if this would have been better served if it's all done by Allred, because he's an excellent writer as well. And I think it would have served him better. In fact, I don't know why it is that one person has to write both titles in the same kind of little mini universe here. That's kind of a more recent thing, more recent trend that we've been seeing. I also still do wonder, I think the name FF is just a bad name. They are better off calling it Future Foundation, because FF, you are going to think it's the FF, well, the Fantastic Four, and it's not. That said, Allred's art, he's one of my favorites. While he's not perfect, he's got some things that are oddities that people could nitpick and say they don't like, and I can see that. He's one of my personal favorites. I really like the way the characters were introduced in this. A lot of characters, and yet every character had their own little moment and was highlighted enough for someone like me who's not familiar with the characters to get to know who is what. And it was done in a very clever way and really well paced. I thought it was a really good book and really surprised me, because I went in preparing to just hate it. Like I say, I appreciate what Fraction did with his Hurricane Sandy or Superstorm Sandy relief efforts here this week, but as a writer, I'm not a fan, but this is... Maybe he's better off, Brett, writing for Allred instead of trying to write his type of books, because his type of books generally not good.
Oh, no, this is much better, and I definitely had that same instance of, like, I really want to read this storyline, but I've just got to say to myself, no, I can't do it. Just can't.
It feels very much like, at least towards the end, maybe after a year, because it does seem like a year plot for what he's setting up both for here and for Fantastic Four. It does seem like maybe at the end there'll be some crossovers, you have to read them together, but it does seem like for the first few months here you'll be able to go off and have your own little storyline and just follow this.
I did have one question about the issue, and maybe one of our listeners can tweet me. When did Scott Lang, Ant-Man, become alive again? I thought he was dead. He died in Avengers Disassemble, and it's been a major plot thread in the Marvel Universe with the Young Avengers and his daughter becoming a hero.
And you're a regular Marvel reader, so if this slipped past your radar, that's not saying that they did necessarily a good job with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it could be in the way that Ant-Man is introduced. He could be some sort of clone that Mr. Fantastic made or developed or something like that, and that's definitely in character with the book. So, and it could be revealed in a future issue. I just found it confusing.
The clone idea again. Please, no clones ever again in comic books. Thank you. All right, any last thoughts for the week, or are we just going to go out with our plugs?
Well, I have one last thought. There's a great page in this week's Justice League Dark, number 14. It is... my pal Photo Cub said it harkened back to Rip Hunter's chalkboard in Booster Gold and Time Masters. It is John Constantine's bulletin board in Justice League Dark, which includes some teasers of Rotworld events in Justice League, and a picture of my guy Booster Gold with a mark, must find Booster Gold.
You could have just led off the news with that, as that's obviously the biggest thing happening.
Well, I got to give people a reason to stick around to the end.
Wow, could we screw up Booster Gold anymore by giving him magic powers?
That'd be awesome.
It's never going to be worse than Extreme Justice, so do what you will. when he has his arm severed and he had an Iron Man armor. It's never going to be worse than that.
His Hulkbuster armor?
Oh, yeah. All right, Brett, you're going to go out with your plug. Anything you got to say?
All right. Well, Brett, B-R-E-T-T underscore WeTalk on Twitter. Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com. Just gearing up for the big month. But one thing that I'll leave everyone with is friendship is magic.
I win. Chris?
I'm Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com, Chris underscore WeTalk on Twitter. Definitely read Keith's blog, 900 Things. It pissed me off. This week, he just sort of flaunted stuff he's not selling that I'd buy. I spent an hour searching eBay for that freaking statue. I hate you, man.
All right, Keith?
All right, I am Keith at WeTalkPodcast.com and CubReporterK on Twitter. And please do check out my blog, 900 Things, as I document this very strange process I've been going through of taking a year off and purchasing physical
items. Your midlife
items.
Crisis.
It is my midlife crisis. Your midlife crisis. I did assure the Mulvey that a copy of Scam was purchased for me, which is within the rules.
There you go.
Mulvey was quite concerned that I would not be able to get issues of Scam.
No, I got that. I'll get that to you soon.
That's right.
I'll get that to you soon.
You are going to have the worst comic expo in the world.
Oh, yeah. You know what? That's right, guys. The comic expo. Did you see some of the announcements on who's going to be there? The Calgary Comic Con for April has started some of their announcements. Stan Lee will be back, so Chris can get something proper.
And God, can we get our photo taken this time?
Team photo this time. Team photo.
That's right.
Team photo this time.
Let's bring Kowalczyk with us this time.
Yeah, did Kowalczyk come with us? James O'Barr, Crow creator James O'Barr will be there. John Carpenter, of course. We talked to his ex-wife, Adrienne Barbeau, for nearly a half hour and have an interview with her up on the site. So I would love to talk to him about Adrienne Barbeau for a half hour. That would be awesome. And if we could swing that, Weird Al Yankovic is going to be there this year. Not sure how many of these we'll be able to get, but certainly we're on it, and it's looking forward. It's looking like another big show. So is there anybody whose name I missed there, Brett?
I think there's somebody else besides Omar that... Adam Hughes.
Adam Hughes. Yeah, that would be awesome. I would love to talk to Adam Hughes. I mean, he's one of the greats. So that would be awesome. So yeah, we're looking forward to that. But also, like I say, guys, I know it's a little bit different show this week, but trust me, hopefully we pull it all off. It's going to be a big, big month no matter what, and a lot of fun coming up here. Of course, there's also a lot of fun over at our sponsor for the news, Comicosity. And over at the podcast, Comic Podcast Network, I'm Mo, M-O at WeTalkComics.com, or WeTalkPodcast.com, sorry.
Oh!
WeTalkPodcast.com, I pulled a Chris. And Mo underscore WeTalk, no E on my name. And I guess we're going to go out with something a little different, a new feature from Chris that hopefully everybody will enjoy. Chris, it's all yours. We are OUT.
Hi-ho. We're running a little bit short this week, so I decided to give you a little preview of a segment that we're planning on debuting early next year, and I'm calling this Comic Book Attractions. We never really get around to doing fanboy film reviews, and it's sort of my wheelhouse. I love film, and I love comic books, and there's a whole bunch of comic book films that I really think people need to see and share. And, I mean, let's face it, it's sort of part of this comic book thing. And we don't talk about that enough on the podcast, in my opinion. So what I'm going to do is just highlight some films. These aren't reviews, although I probably am going to say if I liked it or hated it or whatever. Just to remind you of how much great and not so great comic book films are out there, and remind you that these exist. For the first one, Road to Perdition. I picked this one because right now in the theater, Skyfall is doing huge business. Everyone's talking about the director, Sam Mendes. Road to Perdition is his film. Written by David Self and based off a comic book from 1998, Road to Perdition. Road to Perdition was published by Paradox Press, and Max Allen Collins, the writer, has been a favorite of everyone on the show. And when we heard this was going to become a movie, we couldn't have been more excited. And the film definitely lives up to all that anticipation. I'm just going to play a short clip of the movie just to get you in the mood, and then I'll come back and talk some more about it.
Connor, what the hell are you thinking?
He saw everything.
Can he keep a secret?
He's my son.
A man of honor always keeps his word.
Well, I hope that gave you a taste of what this movie is. It's a classic retelling of Lone Wolf and Cub in a noir-esque 1930s gangster-style Chicago. If you can't tell, I fell in love with this movie from the get-go. And what I love about it most is it's true to the comic book, yet different. It keeps the same feel, yet departs in some major ways. But it understands what the film medium is, and the comic book medium as well. Very respectful to the material, yet it is tailored for the movies. A lot of comic book films, and don't get me wrong, I love them dearly. I love Sin City. I love Watchmen. But sometimes they keep too close to the comic book, which is better than the alternative of throwing out the comic book completely. But a lot of times I don't feel that they actually understand that they are different mediums. But that's my opinion. If you're wondering who Max Allen Collins is, some of his work that I know us on the podcast love and we mention all the time, Brett always brings up Wild Dog whenever we're talking about some of our all-time unused characters. Max Allen Collins is responsible for every issue that Mad Dog is in. Miss Tree is a favorite. He did a wonderful series called Mike Danger. He's Mickey Spillane's ghostwriter. In a lot of cases, he finished off some novels that Mickey Spillane did not live to finish. And he's one of the best writers out there. Strangely enough, he came back to this movie after it was finished and wrote the novelization. Imagine how weird that must have been. But he's gone on record just saying he loves the film. And I particularly like the differences in the film. But I'm beginning to ramble, so it's probably time to sign off. If you have any ideas, any films that you'd like highlighted on the podcast, let me know. and we'll fit them into a future episode. Chris at WeedTalkPodcasts.com. Chris_WeedTalk on Twitter. Chris OUT.